about it. Where did you
see? All right, right here, right at the beginning. Run there. You can see it right there. Good evening, Rital. Good evening. All right. All right, let's roll. Good evening. Good evening, everyone. Erev Tov. It's beautiful to see some faces, some new faces, and some familiar faces. It's always, always great. Welcome. Welcome to the second class of Basic Introduction to Halacha. Last week, we had this introduction to the world of halacha, to the world of mitzvot. What is a mitzvah? What is in halacha? What is the differences between the two? If you remember, we said that Judaism started as the nation driven by mitzvot. Because in the Torah, we have mitzvot 613, according to some. There is a lot of questions. What exactly are those 613 mitzvot? And we said that something during the generations, specifically in the era called the Golden Age of the Spanish Jewry, we turned from being a nation of mitzvot to being a nation of halachot, of halacha. And today, I'll take you on this time machine all the way back to the Middle Ages and all the way until our days, where we'll try to meet the very essential, the very famous and important, the most important, I can say, halachic writings, halachic characters that shaped, also until today, what halacha is and what happened since their times to our modern days and our modern times. So what do we have today? Let's just go through all those pages that we have here. Let's start with this small packet. If you don't have sources, right at the back, as usual, yeah? There's three different kind of pages right here at the table. This small thing, and I apologize for being a male and not to know how to cut on the lines themselves. This small packet of pages is the packet that I edited this week regarding all the important, what I think would be the most important halachic books and characters throughout Jewish history. It's going to accompany us throughout the series. So please keep it and bring it again every class, because I will mention names, books, details, and facts that I wrote inside this little packet. So please just take it afterwards and bring it back. It's for you. And I think it's going to be very interesting. We'll go through some of it today. The second thing that we have is this files. Says on it, a Tanakh tour of the land of Israel. This is actually my mistake that I stapled two pages at the beginning of it. So it starts two pages afterwards, where it says Mishneh Torah, transmission of the oral law. But it's a good thing that we have it, because the first two pages are promotion for two amazing programs that I take part of. The first one is a Tanakh tour of the land of Israel, which is a day of learning, December 26th. Half day would be in person and in Zoom. Second half of the day would be only on Zoom. We're going to have us as Beit Midrash Zichron Dov in Or Chaim, the YU Kollel. We're going to have different classes by different speakers. Everywhere we're going to tour the land of Israel. We're going to choose different places in Israel, cities, places, mountains, everywhere, and we'll have a class on it. It's very, very interesting. Registration is very much recommended. You can see all the details on this flyer. And the second one, we spoke about it, is that Toronto Torah podcast that I'm editing and I'm recording. This is a Parsha podcast, a weekly Parsha podcast. 25 to 30 minutes discussion, open discussion off script on the weekly Parsha. Enough with the promotion. Let's start with some halacha. So, on this file, we'll see the Mishneh Torah, transmission of the oral law, which is the oral Torah. We will learn it in a minute. And afterwards, I copied some of the most important books of halacha. We will go through each one of them. Don't worry. And the third file that we have is a biography, an amazing biography that I found online. And I said, I have to print it down, even though I don't know if we'll have time to go through it. But it's good that you will have it, of the Rambam, the Maimonides. It's an amazing biography, and I gave you, there's this, from My Jewish Learning, which is a website I've never heard of before. I don't know if you've heard of it. Right here at the top of it. It's for you, because we will discuss a lot about this amazing, tremendous character of the Maimonides, of the Rambam today. So that will wrap up everything that we're going to say, along with pictures, with places. It's very, very useful. It's for your usage. And on that note, let's get into our time machine and we'll start. So please take up this small packet that you have. So, Terry told me that there's something in Canada that the kids have those hockey cards, right? They're collecting. So we can start a new thing with the rabbi's cards or halakhic cards if you want to play with each other. Well, they're also been around. Okay, good to know. They're also been around. So maybe I should not have made it and I just could just bring something that someone has. Never mind, but that's for us. So, the first important halakhic book we talked about, and I'm not gonna dedicate more than 1 minute on, is the Mishnah. If you remember, we said that the Mishnah is the codex that Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi has edited. Did not write, but edited. At the time of the second, after the period of the destruction of the second temple, he said, "Et lasot l'Hashem eferu Torahtecha." What can I do? I need to write down the oral Torah, even though this was forbidden. Why? Because there were a lot of traditions, a lot of opinion. Jews forgot what is the one halachic rule that they're supposed to have. I'll need to sit down and write down the halacha. This was the beginning of the transformation that happened from us being a nation followed by prophets, becoming a nation followed by rabbis. I'm not saying the rabbis are prophets, they're not, but they replaced the place. So this is the Mishnah. You can see here on the pen, this is the period, the Jewish period, the Jewish era that we're talking about. It's the Tanaim era. The next one I'm not going to discuss too, we had a whole mini-series about, is the Talmud. The Talmud is a very important halachic book. Not only halacha, if you remember we said that Talmud is also stories, agadot, ethics, everything that you can think of, and also halacha. But it's the roots of us to understand what is oral Torah, what is important in Judaism, what is good and what is bad, what is Shabbos, what is festivals, what are sacrifices. Everything that you can think of is in the Talmud itself. And on that note, let's keep to what we spoke about last week. Baal ha'alachot ha'gdolot, the Bahag. If you remember, I said that the first book written as a halachic book is a book from the Geonim era, which is an era that took place after the Amoraim, after the Talmud. And those people in Babylon, which we don't exactly know who wrote this book, there's different opinions. I wrote here Rabbi Shimon Kayara, because most of the researchers in the academia, they actually assume that this rabbi wrote it. We don't know anything about this rabbi, anything, who he was, who he was born from, nothing, only his name. This book is very important. This book was written around 400 years after the Talmud has finished its editing in Babylon itself. And that was the first time someone stood up and said, we need to know what is the bottom line of halacha. We need to know what we need to do in our daily life. If someone has an halachic question, we cannot just open up the Talmud, look at the conversations that is there, and just figure out what the halacha is. We need something that is more detailed, something that will tell us the bottom line of the halachic case. So he wrote down this book called Halachot Gdolot. The problem was with this book that he wasn't so summing up all the halachot. He took the discussions of the Gemara and tried to just take from the Gemara the halachot without all the stories and all the ethical parts. So it turned out to be a huge book, very, very long, inaccessible to those who don't know Aramaic or Hebrew, all right? And people had to know, okay, if I need to know what the halacha is and I should open that book, I'm going to be in big trouble. And one of the biggest criticism on this book of Halachot Gdolot, we saw it last time, was the Rambam, the Maimonides. The Maimonides said, I don't know why everyone are following this book. If you remember, we said, don't follow this book. It's a book that who wrote it doesn't know halacha. He doesn't know what mitzvah is. If you remember, we said that this book, at the beginning of it, has an explanation of all 613 mitzvot, all 613 mitzvot, according to this guy who wrote this book. And the Rambam completely disagrees with him, completely. He said, no, don't listen to him. He doesn't know what he's talking about. This dude is just don't open his book. Don Hosef opened his book and he said, this is Hebrew. Hebrew and quotes in Aramaic. In Hebrew and quotes in Aramaic. So this is the Halachot Gdolot. But even though the Rambam said, don't read it, it has a lot of influences on the generation afterwards. And then we come to the first character I want to introduce you to. Some of you might heard of him, some of you might not. His name is the Rif. The Rif, Rabbi Yitzchak Alfasi from Fez. All right, that's his name. Rabbi Yitzchak Alfasi is a tremendous scholar. Tremendous, tremendous scholar. He was born, as you can see, in 1013 in Algeria. And he passed away in 1103 in Spain. He was just that's a painting of him. Again, just as a disclaimer, whenever there is a painting and not a picture, and if we're talking about those ears, probably that's not him. All right? Most of it's also for the Rambam. The picture of the Rambam, we'll say it in a minute, is very, very famous. Most rabbis and researchers say, no, this is not the real picture of the Rambam. It's even not a Jew. Probably a Muslim sheikh or something that we think would be the Rambam, but it's not. So this picture, again, no one painted him when he was alive. I don't know why people think this is his picture, but it was, you know, by our Mesorah that this was the picture or the painting of the portrait of the Rif. So the Rif wrote a book. Yes. How do we know? Because there's no evidence since then. There are people who can see a painting and can tell you because of the way the paint is, the colors, the details, that they can tell you which year and which year probably that painting was written in, because there's different styles and different aspects in every painting. But most of them tell this is not his real picture, his real painting, and probably maybe he looked something like that with a beard and with this huge hat on his head, but we don't know if that's exactly him. Most of the people say it's not him. And this tremendous scholar who wasn't in Babylon, he was born in North Africa. And if you remember, I told you last week that there was this story. Again, we don't know if it's true or not. We don't know if it's true or not about those four different fellows that were kidnapped from Babylon and that were taken all the way to Spain to be slaves of this rich person, this Gentile in Spain. And after some decades, they were released. And they studied Torah, and they gave birth to different children, and they opened yeshivot, and their descendants went afterwards to North Africa, and the Jews in Europe, specifically Western Europe, and specifically in Spain, and North Africa, started to expand. All right? They started to build up their yeshivot, their rabbis. And the more the European Jewry, the North African Jewry, rise up, the less the importance of the Babylonian Jewry. And we need to understand something very important, because when we talk about the Babylonian Jewry, we talk about Jews that settled in Babylon since the destruction of the first temple. First temple. All the way until when? Until even today. Even today, there are Jews in Iran. There's no Jews in Iraq, as far as I know. No Jews in Iraq anymore. There are Jews in Iran. Some of them might went there after the Holocaust, before the Holocaust, but there is a core of Jews that live in the Babylon area, and Babylon would be Iraq, Iran, half a little bit of Afghanistan, all right? Since the destruction of the first temple. First temple. It's one of the most ancient Jewish communities out there, all right? First temple, second temple, Talmud time, etc., 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 all the way until today, they are still, I don't know, a couple of dozens of Jews in Iran. So the Jews went all the way to Europe when the glory of the European Jewry started to rise up. The glory of the Babylonian Jewry started to decrease a little bit. And this fellow, this Rif, he was, yes. What? Decrease? What happened? I'm not sure there is one answer for that. I can tell you what I know is two things. First of all, the Babylonian regime itself had a lot of problems. That means Jews, we always, you know, I learned in high school, I did not learn history. I learned Jewish history, what I had. And it was very silly because you cannot learn Jewish history without knowing the bigger picture of what happened in this country and this kingdom back then. Because Jews are a small group. They dwelled, they lived in this city or in this country, and whatever happened above their heads impacted them and influenced what their situation is. So the situation in Babylon, one second, Rana, all right? The situation in Babylon back then was that the regime was bad, or for Jews, or between each other. It wasn't good to live in Babylon. Again, it's not so easy to live there. You need to know that the Jews, and I gave you a map, those of you who attended the last series, you had a map where exactly the Jews settled in the Babylonian era, in the Talmudic area. You can see they're still settling between two rivers, the Prat and the Hiddekel. Those are the most, this is the most expensive place to live in Babylon. All right? Who?
The English ones I just mentioned, are they the representative of the two that you mentioned? The Hiddekel and the...
The English one?
The Tigris and the Euphrates, right?
What, the Kypris and Euphrates?
Tigris.
Tigris and the Euphrates.
Mechumash? Yeah, Hiddekel and Prat, that's how I know. I don't know how you say it in English, I'm sorry. Probably that would be that. You can see how it says in the Chumash, yes. But it said that at the beginning of Bereshit, in the book of Gan Eden, it says that Chamesh Nehorot Yotzei Mi'Eden, two of them would be the Hiddekel and the Prat. Yes, there's two of them. Two of them in Tzipor Gan Eden. It says the name of two of them. And those two rivers, between them, it's not a big space, a big place. The Jews in Babylonian era... That's where they lived. And it was a very inexpensive place. Something happened during the time. The regime changed. People started to move to Europe. Europe was becoming the head of the world. Not only, we need to understand, back then, we're talking about the Middle Ages. Europe was the Enlightenment center of the world. Everything happened in Europe back then. All right? America, no one wasn't discovered yet. No one knew what happened in America. The Far East, China and stuff, no connection to the world. Europe became the center of the world, specifically Spain, which had at the beginning a Muslim regime in Spain, and there was a huge kingdom. The Spanish kingdom back then was a huge kingdom, a Muslim one, which had influences all around the world. Not only then. That was when the Spanish regime was so settled and was so strong, they started to send more people to discover the rest of the world. And that's how most of the globe was discovered, and people moved to other continents. But Europe was the center of everything that happened in the world, and the Jews wanted to be at the center. So they moved to Europe after they were forced to move to Europe. But some of them decided to move to Europe and North Africa, specifically Algeria and Egypt. In Egypt, there was a huge Jewish community in a city called Alexandria. A huge Jewish community. Maybe we'll talk about it later when we get to Rabbi Ovadia Yosef. And we'll talk to the Rambam. So this fellow here was born in Algeria. He moved between different places. He finally died in Spain. And he rewrote a book that is so fundamental. Not only in terms of halacha. In terms of Talmud. He's the first one who actually took the Talmud and said, wait, let's be Mefarshim. Let's write a commentary on it. That's like 300 years before Rashi. All right, Rashi wasn't there. He had the Talmud. He knew Aramaic and he knew Arabic. And he wrote in Arabic a commentary on the Talmud itself. This commentary later became one of the most fundamental texts of halachic books because he went through every and each page of the Talmud and summed up the halacha that he can understand from that. Yes, Rhonda. I remember that I had a question. Sorry.
No, I just looked it up on Google and there are approximately four Jews left in Iraq.
Four Jews in Iraq. Okay. Four Jews in Iraq. Yeah, not even a minion. But, okay, they need to go to Israel. I don't know what you're looking in Iraq to do, but there's four in Iraq, all right?
It might be in jail.
Might be in jail. And now, let's hope not so. Let's hope not so. Yes?
What's the name of the book that you
wrote? The Rif?
Yeah.
Sefer HaHalachot, the Halachot book. So, the moment the Rif was born is considered also the moment where a new period in Jewish history started. This period is called the Rishonim. And this, we talked about it last week, the Rishonim, the first ones period, is one of the most important times in Jewish history because this, in this 300, 400 years, most of the Tanakh commentaries was written down. Rambam, Ramban, Rashi, Ibn Ezra, Sforno, Rashbam, people like them, those names, which we they're huge names in halacha and in commentary, they lived during this time. He's believed to be the first one. He's the first generation of the Rishonim, and the legacy that he had on the Talmud is something that also until today, we're talking about more than 1,000 years ago, we still learn the Rif. Today, I dedicated more than an hour to sit on a passage True story. That Zarif wrote about one of the things Hilchot Shechinim, which is neighbor's laws, in the Gemara. And Zarif has his own commentary and his questions on the Talmud. And me and my Chavrusa, Rabbi Jared Einstein from Shari Shamayim, we sat down and we had to understand exactly what Zarif wants from the Sugiyah. He had his own approach to this, and we just opened the Rif, his book, and we just read what he had to say. Thousands of years afterwards, we still learn his words. He's such a tremendous scholar and had such a huge impact. This is for the Rif. Please move ahead one more, and I want to dedicate some minutes to talk about the Rambam. The Rambam, some say the Maimonides, he's called it in English. I'll talk at the Rambam. Rambam, Rabbi Moshe ben Maimon. He might be, I don't know, we cannot mark rabbis in Jewish history, but the Rambam is something else. It's a different league. The Rambam, first of all, before he was a rabbi, the Rambam was a doctor. He was not only a physician. He was the physician, the official physician of the king. All right? He was the official physician of the king back there in Egypt. All right? He was a tremendous scholar in math, in philosophy, in medicine, in Greek philosophy. He knew by heart all the Greek philosophers that were hundreds of years before him. Socrates, Aristotle, Plato, all those people that are we know as the tremendous Greek philosophers, he read all their books, the Rambam, and he knew them by heart. And he was a tremendous halachic and philosophical figure. Again, this painting of the Rambam, we know it's not him. And if you ask how do we know, Mordechai, that it's not him, look at the beard. This beard is Muslim beard. That's not a Jewish beard because you need to have peyot. Right? Halachically, we need to have peyot. Those two things, we're not allowed to cut them. Everyone thinks this is the Rambam. The Rambam had peyot. All right? This is not the Rambam. This is a Muslim figure. I put it down here because this picture is most known with the Rambam. Maybe. He lived in Muslim times, maybe. But maybe it's not him. But the Rambam did a different path in his life, a different journey from the Rif. The Rambam, who was born in 1138 in Cordova, in Spain. And again, that's a city, not a big city, in southern Spain. You can see, I think that it's in this part. If it's not here, then I'm sorry. But there is, did not brought it. There is a huge statue at the center of this city of the Rambam. They're very proud to be the Rambam city. If everyone ever visited Cordova, please let me know how it is. I've never been there. He was born there. And they're proud to be the Rambam city, even though I don't think there is even one Jew, not even four, who lives in Cordova anymore. And he moved all the way from Europe to Egypt, all right? Because he was offered to be the physician of the king, something really, really amazing. He wrote the first halachic book. Now, I said before that there were written a lot of first halachic books, right? We thought about the Rif, about the Bahag, so why do I say that the Rambam wrote the first halachic book? Because the Rambam was the first one to say, guys, we can't learn halacha from Talmud. We need to write down a book. Again, Arabic and Hebrew, he wrote it in Hebrew. All right, the Mishneh Torah is in Hebrew. He said we need to write down a book in Hebrew. That would be the last book that would ever need to be written. No one else will need to write down a book of halacha after me. No one. He thought that even thousands of years afterwards, if a high priest would come in the third temple, would have an halachic question about one of the sacrifices, or how should I exactly do something with this cow in Beit HaMikdash, he can open Mishneh Torah, he can open the book of Maimonides, and he will know what to do. And I have to tell you that he was right. Because when we are being poskim halacha, we go to the Rambam too, until today. And the Rambam is the one of the only halachic figures who said, I'm writing down halachot that are not only relevant, but also the halachot and the themes, the topics that are irrelevant to our lives anymore. Because he sat down and he wrote halachot for sacrifices in the temple. He said, everything that the Gemara is discussing, I want to write down in the book. And if you can please open this in this codex, in this file, where it says Mishneh Torah, transmission of the oral law. I want to read two passages from it. This is at the beginning. This is the Rambam when he writes as an introduction to his book of Halachot called the Mishneh Torah. He wrote down an introduction where he explains why he wants to write down this book. What happened that he said he wants to write down this book? Look, please, at the last paragraph on the first where it says, in this age. And he says, in this age, with afflictions mightily intensified, the pressure of the hour weighing heavily upon everybody, when the wisdom of our wise did perish, and the prudence was hid, all commentaries, treatises, and responsa, which the Geonim, again, we talked about Geonim is the era right before him, which the Geonim compiled and composed, by them as clear text, are perplexities in our day, and only a select few comprehend the subject matter thereof. Not to speak of the Talmud itself, both the Babylonian and the Yerushalmi, the Sifra and the Tosefta, which are the external parts, the external sources of the Mishnah, which required, he says, the Rambam, a broad understanding, a soul endowed with wisdom and lengthy reflection, when after one may find the right path therein. He says he knew, he worked, he had a profession. He woke up in the morning and he went to his job. He didn't have an office, but he had to treat the king. He did not have time to sit down and learn Torah all day. He was one of those who said, no, you're not allowed to learn Torah for money. If you learn Torah for money, your Torah doesn't count, the Rambam said. You need to have a job. More than that, you know that the Rambam says a man should not get married until he had a solid job position and a solid income. Don't marry someone before you have, undergraduate degrees or something, the Rambam would say today. The Rambam said, you need first of all, to make a living. First of all, to make a living. And he understood, because he worked hard, he understood that if someone makes a living and he needs to wake up early in the morning and come back very late, he will not have not the time, not the patience, and not the knowledge to dive into those very problematic or very complex halachic texts of the Talmud and try to understand how to learn Torah. So he said, wait, I need to write down a book which be so simple that the child who will open the book will right away understand what the halacha is. So simple. And yet, he wrote a book that is so simple that even children can learn the Rambam and understand what the halacha is. That's what he did. And I continue, and he says, look at the next paragraph. Therefore, have I, Moses, son of Maimon, of Spain, girded up my loins and supporting myself upon the rock, blessed be he, made a comprehensive study of all those books and minded myself to construct out of all these compilations, a clear summary on the subject of that which is forbidden or permitted, defiled or clean, along with the other laws of the Torah, the whole scope in pure language and concise style, so that the oral Torah be entirely methodical in the mouth of everybody, without query and without repartee. And that's what I said last week, that when the Rambam did that, that's an amazing concept to do. But that was new. What he wrote here, those sentences, people in his time, they said we need to burn up his books. What are you doing? What are you doing? You're doing something that was never in Judaism before. Writing down the halachic only list of halachot, we were a nation of mitzvot. If you had an halachic question, you would open the books, the discussions, you would ask a rabbi, you will have Q&A about... You know what's going to happen when the Rambam starts to do so? If someone has an halachic question, he will just open up a book and he will see the answer. We're going to end up with discussion. Halacha would become something that is very strict. Yes?
So, let me just put things in perspective.
Yes.
What's the difference between the Sefer Halachot and Mishneh Torah?
So the Sefer of Halachot, what he tried to do is to go through the Talmud and just erase and delete everything that is not halacha. Just to remain in the Talmud, everything that is halacha. But it's still the Talmud. It's still in Aramaic or in Hebrew. Depends what halacha it is in the Talmud. Just went through the Talmud. Oh, this is not halacha. Just take it out. There is a book with short passages of the Talmud. And that's how you should know the halacha. But if you don't know Aramaic, and the Talmud we know is very difficult, to comprehend and to learn. How would you know what the halacha is? So the Rambam said, no, we need to write down the book of lists that we'll see the halacha itself. And if you can open here, right afterwards, if you can see this book, this page, this is a copy of the Mishneh Torah. The Mishneh Torah is this book that the Rambam wrote. I copied one of the new editions that was out. As you can see, it looks very much like what? The Gemara. Right, because thank you to the Vilna publication and to those Gutenberg printers. When they decided to do the Shas Vilna as we see it, everyone else, the generation afterwards, they fall in love with this concept of paging, and they said, let's do every book afterwards in the same thing. There is no reason why to do so. There are different editions where it looks different. There are this, but most of the editions, it looks like the Gemara one. But this is not Gemara. All right, let's not be confused. At the middle of it, this is the Rambam. Okay, this is what the Rambam said. This is exactly, you see, Yudchet. Yudchet is 18. This is halacha number 18. Just 3-4 sentences of halacha. That's all. And then 19. Haya melaket gabei yerek umaniach begina. And then 20. Trumat maaser. It's about trumot maasrot. It's about things that we do in our field. Now, this was what the Rambam wrote down. He said, I don't need more than that. That's enough for me. I don't need more than that. Let's write down. He wrote 14 volumes called Hayad HaChazakah. Yad, Yud Dalet 14, right? 14 in Gematria. And he said, that's all. I don't need to write more than that. I'll write 14 volumes from the beginning of what is exactly Emunah, how one should believe in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He talks about this as well. He has a sefer, a book called Sefer HaAhava. Ahava, where he talks what? He talks about, for example, Limud Torah. All right, how should one be learning Torah? What is the Torah? How much should you learn Torah during the day? Question that people did not ask before. Because he understood that he writes down not to a rabbi. Not to rabbis, not to scholars. He writes down a book to the simple people. And he knew that a simple people, a simple person who needs to make a living and to wake up early in the morning to drive to his office, he needs to know how much time to dedicate in his day, should he dedicate in his day to learn Torah. So the Rambam adds an halachot that says, how much time should you dedicate during the day in learning Torah, for example. And all the way from this, all the way until talking about the priest in the Beit HaMikdash, how he should act. The Rambam made a tremendous impact on halachic world all the way until today. And he's one, maybe, might be the most influential text of halacha until the Shulchan Aruch. And we'll get to the Shulchan Aruch. Don't worry, we'll get to the Shulchan Aruch. He also wrote another very important book called Moreh Nevuchim. Moreh Nevuchim is the teacher of the perplexed, or the guide, thank you, of the perplexed. This is a philosophical book. Even then, when he wrote it down, again, people said, let's burn this book, because he combines Aristotle philosophies and Plato's philosophies into it. It's a tremendous scholar. Moreh Nevuchim is still one of the most fundamental books in Jewish philosophy all the way until today. People learn when they have philosophical questions in their belief, what is God? Why? How come the Torah said that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is angry? Only human beings are angry. How come the Torah says God is angry? We know that God doesn't have any a body, not reflections, right? So how come God can be angry? Human is angry. So until the Rambam, no one was brave enough to write down this question and to give answers. And the Rambam gave answers. We sing every Friday night in this show. Some sing it at the day. We sing Igdal Elokim Chai. Right? What is that? Those are the 13 attributes that the Rambam, he said, those are the 13 attributes that we as human beings, we need, as Jews, we need to believe in. We need to believe who HaKadosh Baruch Hu is. We need to believe in Moshe Rabbeinu. We need to believe that there is no, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has no form. He doesn't have any body. He's not embodied. He doesn't have a form. It's something amorphic. Right? He doesn't have a body. Those 13 laws, 13 fundamentals, rules, are from the Rambam. And the Rambam is an amazing scholar, and we still, his impact on Jewish philosophy, halacha, is way, way beyond explanation. And the third figure I want to discuss now would be the Rosh. If you can turn one page afterwards, the Rosh. Rabbi Asher ben Yechiel. He was born in 1250 when the Rambam was 46 years after the Rambam passed away. He was born in Köln, in Germany. Germany in Köln. in Köln. I don't know if those of you who are German can pronounce this, the name of the city. He was born in Germany. You can see that by his time, Jews started to expand more eastern, all right? And afterwards, even more eastern, to Poland and to the Soviet Union afterwards, a lot of years afterwards. And he died in Spain, in Toledo. Toledo, just a word on this city, was the head, the center of Jewish life in Spain back then, in the Middle Ages. A lot of the rabbis died or were born in Toledo. Some of them were brought to Israel for burial, and there's still graveyards of those great rabbis in Toledo until today. Why in Toledo? I have no idea. Probably there are a lot of people who knows why. I don't know why. What was so important and so special in that city. But the Rosh, first of all, he lived for a lot of years. He lived for almost 80 years. All right? He lived for 77 years. And he wrote down, not a book of halachot, but he wrote down a book of psakim. What is psakim? What is a psak halacha? Let's talk about it for a minute. What is a psak halacha? Psak halacha is a different from halacha. Is when you, as a simple person, let's say Michael, I'll give you an example. When Michael has an halachic question, he goes to the rabbi and he asks the rabbi, what do you say? I went to Umami Sushi and I ate, I forgot I ate a burger before and they served me and I bought something with a dairy. I forgot I ate it, and I bought it already, and then after I bought it and I paid the money, I now I remember that I'm fleshing, I cannot eat it. Can I cancel my order, for example? Or maybe this is something that we should not do as Jews, because it's not immoral. He did not know. He's not, you gave him the money. Why should he suffer? Because you forgot of eating. I'm not saying that happened, but as an example. So, this is a very specific question that has a lot of different aspects into it. First of all, who's this shop? And when did you eat the meat? What kind of meat did you eat? Sometimes it's different if you eat chicken or meat. What exactly did you order? How much was it? How long after you order it and you paid the money did you remember that you cannot eat the dairy? There's a lot of questions. There is no halachic book that if we open, even at the Rambam, that if we open, we'll go to page 173 on the third paragraph and we'll find the answer to what happens if you order something dairy from a restaurant. There's no book like that, right? Because the halakhic book is supposed to be as general as possible. So everyone can know what are the essential of the rules. But what happens, and this happens every day, that we have complex questions. We have complicated questions. We're a human being, and it can be that, and it can be things that are within the family. It can be things between a husband and a wife. It can be things that are between you and your friends. It can be everything. What happens then? Then we have the concept of piskei halacha. Psakim, what is a psak? A psak is a decision. Psak, in Hebrew, decision. Psak halacha is halachic decision. This is a decision that a rabbi makes upon a question that he was asked. Now, sometimes he was asked this question by one of his congregants, one of the people that live in the city. Sometimes he receives letters, he receives emails, he receives WhatsApp texts that ask him a question. Sometimes he even thinks of a question by himself, and then he writes down a book with the question that he made up with, because he knows that one day someone will have this question, and he writes down his answers. That happens as well. All those answers to questions are called psakim, piskei halacha. Now, the Rosh, he wrote down a book called Piskei Rosh. Piskei Rosh are the question that he was asked or a question that he made up. And he thought, I should write it down as a book with the halacha. Now, this is a new thing. Why is that a new thing? Because the Rambam wrote down a wide road book with a lot of lists and bullets of halacha. The Rosh said, wait, I'm writing something else. I will write something that is more what? More human. More complicated sometimes, because you know, if someone has a question and he will open the Rambam, not necessarily he will find his answer. With all the respect to what the Rambam did, maybe if you want to ask yourself how should one, or let's say how much time should I wait between meat and dairy, so I can open the Rambam and I'll see what the Rambam has to say about it. But if I have a more complicated, if I forgot, for example, when I ate, or if I forgot what I ate, or if I already ate something and then I have a question, oh, what should I do now? So if I already ate dairy when I'm not, can I eat now every dairy that I want to? Did I just break my dairy fast and I can eat everything that I want or not? So all those great questions that are not in the Rambam, the Rosh said, let's write it down as the Psakim. Let's write it down as a Q&A. And there is a question and there is a very detailed answer. There is a question and a very detailed answer. And this Rosh did it This Rabbeinu Asher, he did it upon what? Upon the Talmud, yes.
Is the fact that different Jewish groups have different traditions, for example, for inflation, for me to pass after the Talmud, does that mean like that these books that were written or these suggestions were not necessarily accepted by all, or is it because they were different groups had different leaders that did not accept them?
That's a huge question. I thought of getting to it next week, a little bit about the difference between Ashkenazi and Sephardi, but I will say it now, because it's good to say a little bit about now. Mainly what happened is Jews lived in different places in the world. They were not so connected to different parts of it, and because we're socializing, and because halacha is, and that's why I'm telling you that we're not yet there, but halacha is more social than it's divine. All right, that's something we need to understand. Halacha is more social than it's divine. Yes? Halacha is more social than it's divine. Why? Because if the Torah says do something, but no one does it, then we forget this halacha. If there is no people to practice this halacha is gone. All right? Halacha is something more social than it's divine. If there is no social, if there is no group to practice and perform this halacha is being forgotten. So, because of that, there are different places in Europe, there is differences between North Africa and Europe, and a lot of times these differences differs because who's the rabbi that wrote the book you go from. Because what happened in the Talmud, there's different aspects, there's different approaches in the Talmud itself. There is the book of the Rambam, for example. There is the book, the Piskei Rosh. Sometimes, not sometimes, a lot of times, for the same thing, the Rambam would say X and the Rosh would say Y. It happened more than once. The Rambam said X and the Rosh said Y. Now, the question is, if you were born in Egypt or in Spain or in Portugal, you go by the Rambam back then. If you were born in Germany, you're Ashkenazi, all right? You'll go by the Rosh back then and not by the Rambam, all right? So there's differences. For example, we know until today that the Jews from the Netherlands, for example, they have their own tradition for how much hours to keep between meat and dairy, and they keep
1 hour.
1 hour, right? We all want to be Dutch. That's how you say in English, right? Yeah. We all want to be Dutch. It's amazing. Maybe that's because Dutch really love cheese. I don't know why. But that's an amazing thing because the rabbis back then, they had their own tradition. They had their own stuff, and they put it into it. This, we'll get it next week when we talk about Rabbi Yosef Karo, because when he wrote down the Shulchan Aruch, this was one of the things that he didn't want to do. He didn't want to pay attention to different minhagim and traditions. He wanted to write down one thing. The Ramah said, no, don't do it. The Ramah, Rabbi Moshe Iserlich, we'll talk about next week, he said to Rabbi Yosef Karo, who wrote down the Shulchan Aruch, what are you doing? You're writing only halachot that are relevant to those who are Sephardic. We're Ashkenazi, we're from Poland, we're from Germany, we're from Latvia, we're from Lithuania. We have different traditions. What about our traditions? We need to know different stuff for Kula and for Humra, for things that are more easy and for things that are more strict. Yes?
Since you're talking about this, since you mentioned Dutch, it sounds like they're more Sephardic, even though they are in Northern Europe, but they are descended from Portuguese Jews. Is that right? So are Dutch Jews considered Sephardic?
No. They're Dutch. They're Dutch.
Okay.
They're not Ashkenazic, they're not Sephardic. They're Dutch. The question would be, what city do they daven in? And again, those are social questions, because I can be...
There are both synagogues in Amsterdam, like there's a Spanish and Portuguese synagogue. And
Spanish and Portuguese, exactly. It depends a lot of time. What city do you daven in? So here, we daven in Ashkenazic one, all right? But in Yeshiva Or Chaim, when I working during the days, we daven in Sephardic, not Sephardic, which is a later edition of the Arizal, something else, but it's a different nusach of the Seder. We have different, for example, the Ashkenazic one for the Kedusha has Nekadesh Shimcha Baolam Keshem Shemakdishim Oto. We have in the Sephardic one, we have Nakdishach V'Naritzach, like we have on Shabbos, all right, on Musaf. On Musaf, the Sephardic one has Keter, Keter itnu lecha, and we have naritzach v'nagdishach. So it differs not only on where you were born or where your grandparents were born, also to what kihila, to what community do you affiliate yourself in. It's a lot of social aspect into halacha, into traditions. It's not so simple. So this is the Rosh. The Rosh was in the Rishonim too. His son, Rabbi Yaakov ben Arosh, his son of the Rosh, he said, wait. Dad, thank you very much for writing down this psakim, those decisions. It was amazing. Today, and I learned the Rif, I learned the Rosh as well, and there is a contradiction, disagreement between the Rif and the Rosh about something about the Sugya. We learn the Rosh every day. But his son said, wait, let's turn, that was a genius concept, let's turn this Psakim, these decisions of the Rosh, into what? Into a book, of halachic, a book of Halacha. He said, let's just like what the Rambam did back then, we'll do the same, what? We'll base it on the Psakim of my father. We'll turn it. And this is the beginning of something that happened over and over and over again in Jewish history, in the halakhic history. The father wrote a book, and the son tried to sum it up. It happens all the time. All the time. Sometimes, also, the person himself wrote a book, a very long one, and then he realized, oh, no one will read that. I wrote it for 25 years. No one will read it. And it took 14 more years to just sum it up into small bullets. We'll see it next week. This is the Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch, the great Shulchan Aruch, is only a shortcut of the bigger book called Bet Yosef. But no one reads the Bet Yosef. Everyone goes to the Shulchan Aruch. So eventually, Rabbi Yosef Karo took more than 20 years to write down the Bet Yosef. But everyone remember him by the eight years that it took him to write down the shortcut of what he wrote. It started here, in the Rosh, and the son of the Rosh. Yes, yes.
By contrast, mitzvot in the Torah would be divine.
Mitzvot are 100% divine.
Okay, so could you explain what you mean by social and halacha effects?
Yes, halacha changes. How does halacha change? We'll have a class only on that. But halacha changes, one of the most massive, let's say, criteria that motivates halacha to change, passively, not actively, not that a rabbi came and said, I'm going to change it, but passively, is that the public decide slowly to change it. I'll give you an example, a live example of something that right as we talk is changing. Two examples. First of all would be...
Quinoa.
What? Quinoa is what? Is it a kitniot?
Yeah,
for Pesach, you're talking about. Yeah, that's what I want to say. Not only quinoa, but I want to say also kitniot in general. Okay, thank you. But yeah, also quinoa, but not only that. In general, kitniot. Kitniot in Pesach. Again, not here maybe, but in Israel. I'm married to a Moroccan, half Tunisian. Okay, very good. I'm not eating kitniot. She eats kitniot. Now, that's fine. I cannot eat. She can eat. But what happens with our children? It's very... In Pesach, of course. Then what's going to happen with our children? We don't yet there. But when the children go to grandfather and then the grandmother and they're being served rice. What then? Should I tell them, don't eat at your grandparents, this is not kosher? They will throw me out of the door, right? They'll kick me out. What?
It's not a kashrut.
That's right. It's not a kashrut. And there's still halachic answers about if it's served on the table and you can see it, but you cannot take it and you have alternatives, you can do it. If you've been served to your table, sometimes that's what they like to do here in Canada. It's or a buffet, or they put the plate on. It's not like in Israel. Either they just put everything on the table, just take. But here, they like to serve it to your plate. If you've been served something, and you don't know if it has kitniot inside or not, and you're eating in a Sephardic or Moroccan or Tunisian family, don't try to look for the kitniot. Just eat it. Just eat it. There's a lot of rabbis who say, just eat it. That's fine, because we're in Israel. We're in the kibbutz galuyot. There's different masorot. You need to respect the other masorot as well. And respect other masorot is not necessarily to respect the one that is more frum. Also to respect the one that is more easy. To respect the one that says, no, we're not strict on that one. And if you eat in a Sephardic home, and you don't... If you have a bowl of rice and you have a bowl of meat and you can just take from the meat, good. If you don't have it or you don't know, don't try to make a surgery on your dish and try to see what exactly do you eat. So yes, halacha changes, and a lot of times it's because of social stuff. So in Israel, we have another thing that changes, and we're not going to have time to continue, but that's a good topic to do, is limud Torah to women. Women who study Torah. That's a huge change that is still taking place while we talk. I see Terry is hiding behind the tablecloth. It's a huge change that still is taking time. What happened? First of all, other stuff that are not related to Jews, all right, not related to Judaism at all. The movements of freedom for women, of progressive for women, a lot of stuff that happened, and We're social people, and we are impacted and influenced by things that are outside and outdoors, and they come into our house, and they come into our home, those environments and those movements, and they have impact also on halacha. they have impact on halacha. And today, yes, everyone, also the Haredim, even though they will say maybe it's not so important, but also the Haredim, everyone thinks a woman can learn Torah. But it's not as what we think it is. Already, it's not what we think it is. Also on Shabbos, there's a lot of things on Shabbos. For example, the Shabbos timer. All right. Back then, there were people who said, no, what are you doing at Shabbos time? Are you going to heat things on Shabbos? How come you're going to do it? But today, no one is even... It's part of our Shabbos. I mean, a Shabbos timer is a Shabbos timer. It's something that we... It's part of a Shabbos. Without it, the Shabbos would be very, very weird.
Shabbos lamp.
Exactly. You can turn it. Exactly. A lot of stuff. Halacha changes a lot of time because of social aspects of it. And when I say it's not divine, I doesn't mean it's not divine. It's divine. But who, at the end of the day, decides if we practice and we observe it or not, or how do we observe it, is the people. Not the rabbi. And unfortunately, we don't have prophets, so we can ask God what to do. But we assume that the poskei halacha, those who make the decisions, they are the representative of the halacha. And a lot of times, it's not on their choice. And I'm talking to you as the one who serves also in a rabbinic role. And no, it's the people. If I can tell someone who has a question something, if he doesn't want to practice it, I'm okay. I mean, he will not. I can try to pursue and to convince him, but it's up to the people themselves. So this person, this son of the Rosh, Rabbi, and I want to get back to it just to finish it. Rav Yaakov, the son of the Rosh, Ben HaRosh, he said, let's wrap up, let's sum up the book of my father. And he wrote down a book called Arba'at HaTurim, or in shortcut, the Tur. What is the Tur? The Tur is a column in Hebrew, Tur. Arba'at HaTurim are the four columns. Why four columns? First one, he said, let's divide the book into four different volumes. Every volume is called a Tur. First one is called Orach Chaim. Orach Chaim is the book of Halachot regarding prayer, Shabbos, festivals, daily life. Everything that is Orach Chaim. Orach is my regular daily routine. Chaim, our life. The routine of life. Then we have Yoredea. Yoredea is everything regarding Yore. Yore is Yore Halachot. There is a Gemara that said, what is Yore? Yore will be Yore Halachot. For example, Kashrut. If you have a question about, should I eat it or not? What happens if I took my fleshic spoon and I mix it in the dairy? This is Yoredea. All right? Afterwards, we have Evan Ha'ezer. Evan Ha'ezer would be, just as you sound, the stone of engagement, the stone. It will be about women issues, about marriage, about divorcement. He said, let's sum all the psakim that my father had about those topics into a book regarding divorcement, get, weddings, women issues, mikveh, nida, everything that is in regarding this topic would be in Evan Ha'ezer. And the fourth and the last one would be Choshen Mishpat. Choshen Mishpat. Choshen is what we know of the Kohen Gadol had. Mishpat is law. Laws between neighbors, laws between, I don't know, in stores, and Dinei Aveda that we learn if you find a lost. Everything that is legal ethics, laws, everything that is there would be in Choshen Mishpat. That was his invention. And his invention of dividing the halakhic world into those four volumes, is the way, all the way until today, we'll learn halakha. For example, everyone who wants to become a rabbi, and it doesn't matter if you want to become a rabbi in Israel, or he's going to get his smicha from Lakewood Yeshiva, or from YU, or from Chovevei Torah, or from a conservative seminary, or from a reform seminary. He needs to get tested throughout all the four sections of the Shulchan Aruch. The four sections are Orach Chaim, Yoredea, Evan Ha'ezer, and Choshen Mishpat. He just decided to divide it like that. But halacha is divided today into four sections. Every halacha will fit into one of those sections. That hasn't changed since then. Hasn't changed. That's how we divide halacha. In Israel, if you're going through the test of the Chief Rabbinite, you go through, you have four tests. You have a test on Orach Chaim, Yoredea, Hilchot Avlut, for example, mourners, where it comes in. You need to go through all of the four sections. Not Choshen Mishpat, it's different. If you want to become a Dayan on Kurt, a judge on Kurt, you need to go through the Choshen Mishpat. But all those four sections are essential for a rabbi to become a rabbi. If a rabbi hasn't learned if he hasn't learned those four sections deeply, profoundly, he cannot be a rabbi. This is the gateway of someone who wants to become a Posek Halacha. He needs to be fluent in those four sections. But the one who thought about it is the tour. Arba'at HaTurim, he thought, let's just sum up my father's book into it. Now, when he did it, he did not only sum it up. He said also, I have a huge masterpiece called the Mishneh Torah by the Rambam. The Rambam wrote something very interesting. So what he did, and that was the first time it happened, he took the Rambam and he took his father. A lot of the time he went by his father. But he also put the Rambam inside. And he said, the truth says, the Rambam says X, my father says Y. And he discusses what he thinks would be the right answer. So that was the first time the Rambam was taken in count into another halachic book. And they counted his opinion and his halachot into it. That was the tour. And the tour, which slash the Rosh, because his psakim in the tour is the psakim of his father, of the Rosh. The Rif, remember the Rif that we spoke about at the beginning, who wrote this book about in the Gemara, and the Rambam, those three, called Amudei HaTavich. Amudei HaTavich would be, in Hebrew, the fundamental, the basis posts, or the basis infrastructure. What?
Foundation,
thank you. There would be the foundation, the infrastructure to modern halacha. And we talk about modern halacha, we start in the Shulchan Aruch. Because what the Shulchan Aruch did, and we will see it next week, he took those three scholar, tremendous, amazing characters, the Rif, the Rambam, and the Rosh is in the Tur, in his son, he took those three and he said, let's do something that is new. Let's combine those three. Let's look about the differences. Let's write down a new halachic book based on the section, the way, the division that the Rabbi Yaakov ben Asher did, those four sections. The Shulchan Aruch divided it as well. And he said, let's take those three. We'll write down the new halachic book. And guess what? His halachic book. No one came up and said no about that. And what he wrote, Rabbi Yosef Karo, this tremendous person that we'll meet next week, and his tremendous work of Shulchan Aruch is until today the most fundamental halachic book ever written. And if we have a halachic question, we will go to the Shulchan Aruch. We will not go to the Rambam. Maybe if we're Yemen still go to the Rambam, which is a different question. Why? Because the Yemen very much appreciates the Rambam. He really helped them when they were prosecuted, and he sent letters to their kings. Different story. But most of the Jewish world will open the Shulchan Aruch when they have an halachic question. Now, if they're Ashkenazi, they will open the Shulchan Aruch with the comments, the notes of the Rama. We'll talk about it next week. But Ashkenazi and Sephardic, everyone will open the Shulchan Aruch until today when they have an halachic question. There was not even one book as important that was written after the Shulchan Aruch as it is. Until our days, nothing. And there were a lot of halachic books. We'll talk about the rest that is here. A lot of halachic books were written down. Not as important as the Shulchan Aruch. So, to conclude it, those three characters, the Rif, the Rosh, and the Rambam, are the fundamental basis, the infrastructure, and the foundation of halacha as we know today, thanks to those three different amazing figures and what they renewed into the world of halacha. Thank you very much. I'm here for more questions. What? Right. Karo had to make the decision between the three. Exactly. And we go through his decision. We go through his decision. Yeah. More questions. The class went fast. I know. Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much. Please bring those pages next week as well, because there is more on these pages. There is a copy from the Shulchan Aruch, which I want to talk about, and a copy from the tour. Oh, I haven't showed it. If you want to see it, the next page, here, this is the tour. What he wrote, again, it looks like the Gemara and looks exactly like the Rambam. But this is what Rabbi Yaakov ben Asher did. This is his book with everything in, but the middle of it would be that. Thank you very much.
I sent two emails. One, they're both pictures of the Rambam. One is on an Israeli stamp commemorating him. The other one's on a Spanish stamp. And ironically, the one that has the full beard is from Spain.
It's from Spain.
Not from
really.
Not from Israel.
Really.
Yeah. So the one that from Israel is based on the picture that you showed.
Wow.
But the one from